on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our February 2nd, 2026 edition, and a lot is happening in markets. We are seeing gold and silver pull back. We have geopolitical volatility. We have domestic volatility. We have some AI deals that some are falling through, and a lot of volatility in that market as well. But this show is really about you. We can talk about all of this and much, much more on today's show. But ultimately, it's up to you to give us a call and let us know what's on your mind. If you want something discussed, I'm happy to dig into it. But once again, we love and encourage your calls. So we'll be answering a lot of those on this hour so that we can help you become a better investor. Now, in the next hour, we're going to cover a lot, hopefully. And number one, we're going to take a look at the broader markets and market performance. We're going to run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this caller question first.
Hey, InvestTalk. I recently opened a position in BWXT. And in researching that company, I came across another one, Woodward, WWD, and wanted to see what you guys thought about this. And I wanted to know what you guys thought about the fundamentals and what a good entry point price would be. Thanks again.
Taking a look at Woodward, WWD is the symbol. It's about a $20 billion name, and that's because it has rallied considerably over the past couple of years. Back in mid-2023, it was trading around $100 per share. Now we're at $327 per share because earnings have gone from $4.21 back then in 2023 to $9.48 expected this year. Now it's trading at a fairly hefty multiple, but if you look on forward-looking, it's about roughly 35 times earnings. So that is quite expensive. Now, what do? They design and manufacture control solutions for aerospace and industrial markets. So you're talking about products for management of fuel, oil, combustion, and motion control. Industrial segment includes management of fuel, air, fluids, gases, electricity, motion, combustion, etc. So clearly they are in the crosshairs of the AI data center build out, and their earnings have gone up considerably because of that. And earnings growth last quarter was 61% year over year. Revenue growth up 16% year over year. Their profitability metrics are pretty good, about 18-19% return on equity, 13.5% return on invested capital. Those are all solid numbers. You know, my always question after this big run is, where is that compared to history? Now, if I zoom in a 10-year chart, that's a little bit above average. So that's a good sign. It's not crazy high, but it's near the higher end of the range. And it's, like I said, a little bit above average. So I like this space, the industrial and aerospace and defense, all of this I'm a big fan of. The technicals are obviously very strong, and that you're paying up for the multiple. Now, if the growth slows, certainly that multiple could contract. But you know, this is a momentum name. It could certainly move higher, and I like it. I would love it at a cheaper price, but you know, you may not get that cheaper price. So if you're looking at a long-term play, this would be a fine place to buy it. Thanks for the call. There was a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we'll get to all of it. And our main focus point is the insurance inflation spike. New data shows health and property insurance premiums are skyrocketing by 26%. So we'll analyze this shadow inflation, how to adjust your budget and portfolio for rising protection costs. In addition, we'll get to other topics on the docket as well. I want to hit on how investors are betting going into the midterms and the fact that, you know, the current administration, they want the economy to run hot. Now, how are they doing that? We'll talk about that. Also, we'll hit on housing. Nearly two-thirds of homebuyers last year purchased at a discount to the original list price. That's the highest proportion since 2019. So we'll talk about that and what that means for housing prices here in a little bit. And then the new mantra across the world is sell America. And the world is exposed to about $69 trillion of U.S. assets. So who are the potential sellers if that kicks into gear? And we'll talk about that. But ultimately, it's about what's on your mind. We'll have your voice bank calls. We have a couple recorded ones. One is on when to hit the panic button. And the other is Salesforce, CRM. And we have some questions that came in earlier from the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. But we're going to head to a break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the Invest Talk voice bank. And if you're listening via our live stream or maybe on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now. Number is always 888-99-CHART. Hang on, because I plan to hit on today's market activity in the next segment.
When you tell your friends about InvestTalk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing from KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go take a look at the market today. It was a bounce back day after a little bit of sell-off last week. Now you still had some broader weakness around large cap tech. You had NVIDIA down 2.8%, Microsoft down 1.6%, Tesla down 2%, Meta down 1.4%. Google and Apple were the strongest, Apple up over 4% on the day. So you continue to see names that are not tied to OpenAI. They are starting to continue to outperform. And even Oracle down 2.7% on the day. You had energy down a little bit. Exxon was down a little bit over 2%. But elsewhere, you had some strength. Walmart and Costco are up. Amazon up. A lot of the nuts and bolts of the AI industry were strong. Names like Micron and AMD, those were strong. And then healthcare had a nice little day as well. So overall, if you're talking about breadth, it was pretty good. But you definitely had some red that held the market back. NASDAQ was up about 0.5% on the day. And then you had S&P up about 0.5% as well. So pretty interesting day in markets. You had gold continue to come down about 2% in pretty volatile trading. So it's not shocking to see the markets down big on Friday when it comes to gold and silver. Speculation was very high, a lot of leverage. And that just creates a situation that's ripe for high volatility. You have any bit of news that will kind of put a damper on the sentiment around the trade will bring it back considerably. And that's what happened. And frankly, it's still holding major support. It's still in a long-term uptrend. And usually these type of events take a few days to kind of settle out to find some sort of stability. And 2% down day in gold, not really that big of a deal. Silver down 1.9%, same thing, kind of volatile session. Bitcoin down 6.9%, back below 80,000, support around 75,000. But this still kind of remains that the thorn in the side of the bullish scenario for markets over the shorter term. And, you know, maybe this is why we're getting this very choppy period, despite the earnings season coming in so far pretty strong. So that's something to consider when you are looking at your the momentum in markets and whether we're going to get a pullback in the short term. And the fact that Bitcoin continues to be weak is telling me that there's more weakness underneath the surface of this market than the charts are really letting on. WTI crude settled down 4.7% on the day amid U.S. Iran talks. So some of that war premium coming out of oil. Treasuries were weaker with the curve flattening, yields up about 3 to 4 basis points on the short end. So once again, the market pricing in a new Fed chair, Kevin Warsh, that is likely to be a bit more hawkish than everyone had expected. You know, he's talked before about maybe shrinking balance sheets, et cetera, balance sheets of the Fed, shall I say. And NVIDIA, the big news was NVIDIA planned a $100 billion investment in OpenAI. This is kind of that circular financing issue that everyone's been worried about. And what's interesting is NVIDIA pulled back. The deal negotiations were not progressing beyond the early stages. And so, you know, what's going to happen here? And you know, NVIDIA's business is very tied to whether OpenAI can continue to grow, continue to spend on CapEx, et cetera. And if they pull back, that could be a big issue. Now, Oracle is not planning to pull back. $45 to $50 billion is going to be deployed this year through debt and equity sales. So they're pushing forward. Obviously, that's good for NVIDIA, but the market didn't react well to NVIDIA today. On the economic front, you did have ISM manufacturing come in much better than expected, even at 52.6 versus consensus 48.9. So we'll see that a lot of that was new orders. So we'll see if that starts a reacceleration in the broader economy. The January's S&P PMI came in at 52.4 versus 49.5 was the expectation. So you saw that a bit stronger as well. So the manufacturing sector, after really struggling since the start of the tariffs last year, is showing a little bit of life. Now, how much of that is durable? How much of that is just inventories running low and more orders coming in? We shall see. But that was interesting as well. And the big thing that most people don't pay attention to was the Fed's senior loan officer survey. Lending conditions for C&I loans actually tightened for firms of all sizes. So there's stronger demand, but it's they're tightening standards, and that is not a good thing for lending. So we'll watch for, you know, bank lending overall slowing, and that is an indication that that could happen in the shorter term. So that was the market today. A lot of news, a lot of movement as we start a new week and another week of earnings. Now, you probably know by now we receive questions from the comments section of our YouTube channel, and here's one that came in earlier. Mikey Chance says, "Hey guys, I have a small position in AOS. I was looking to add, wanted to get your thoughts on the company at these levels." All right, looking at AOS, this is a name that we have in the past owned for clients, but we don't currently. AOS Smith, they manufacture water heater equipment for various residential and commercial markets. And this has gained some strength. It was weak from late 24 all the way until just recently, and it's starting to gain some traction again to the upside. The problem for us, and one of the reasons we sold it, was a high exposure to China. And China has pivoted their business or their economic model away from real estate. And that is significant for AOS, because if they're not building more units, that means lots of water heaters, et cetera. And mainland China is 20% of their revenue. And that's an issue for us. And earnings expectations for this year and next year continue to come down. Now, we like the business. It's a solid company with solid return on equity. I think over the long term, you could do far worse. But I just don't like the near-term issues with China. They have a good balance sheet, but earnings expectations are coming down. And ultimately, it's still in a longer-term downtrend. So name I'd continue to watch for maybe an inflection in building in China. But until then, I'm remaining away from AOS. Thanks for the comment. Now we're heading into a break, and we thank you for helping us achieve more than 62 million downloads. And I would love to hear from you. So give me a call now with your question at 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Longtime listener to the show here. I'm Matt from Minneapolis. Is there a time limit or a certain dollar amount you would ever recommend if you are in a stock and just for, I don't know if it's political reasons or something going on in the world, but anyways, the stock has tumbled on you recently, and it's tumbled maybe like over 20 points or more, and you've lost like over $1,000 on it here and stuff. It still seems like a decent stock. Is there a time limit or a dollar amount when you just bail? I know at times you don't sell just because it's going down. That's sometimes a good reason to buy, and try not to buy at highs. That's, you know, you want to sell when it's hitting new highs and buy when it's at lows and all that stuff. But is there a time when you just kind of hit not quite the panic button, but how big of a loss do you take before you do just hit the panic button and get out? You don't want to lose everything you have. So I didn't know if there was a magic amount or certain percentage. So please let me know. I appreciate everything you have to say. Have a good day.
Well, first off, you never want to hit the panic button. And what you want to do is have a plan. So if the momentum wanes, that's kind of what you're talking about, and it breaks your the upward trajectory, the momentum, in a material way, then yeah, you do get out. You take your lumps, you take your losses. It's something that the amateur investor has a lot of trouble with, is listening to the market. And that's what you have to do when you are seeing market, seeing the price of any asset class, any company, anything move. The market is telling you a story. Now, it might be a short-term story. It might be nothing related to the company. And it might be just broader market volatility. That's potential. And you have to read that. Is what is that correlation to everything else that's out there? If it's moving on its own and the market is relatively quiet, you could say, look at the last 4 or 5 months. The market's been kind of flat, choppy, sideways. But underneath the surface, there's names that are breaking out to the upside. There's names that are breaking down. And that is a signal to you. You have to listen to the market. And if an if you own a stock, it's in an upward trend, and suddenly it's starting to roll over, it's starting to lose that momentum, it's starting to break uptrends and trend lines, then yeah, you get out and you find better opportunities and you say, maybe I'm missing something. And I always say, don't argue with the market. The market doesn't care about your opinion. The market is moving for a particular reason. Now you get market. There's a lot of cycles to this, kind of short-term ebbs and flows. But overall, if things are going well with the broader economy, the broader industry, and that company in specifically, then it will generally be in an uptrend. It's not going to be up every day or every week, but it's going to find support. It's going to settle in on pullbacks, and there are going to be buyers there that pick up those shares. When there aren't buyers, that means there's something wrong. The wisdom of the crowds kind of sees, you know what? I don't want to be involved in this name right now. And that's when you can see that breakdown lower. So it's about having a plan and listening to the market when it breaks your rules, which should be part of that plan. Thanks for the call. Now let's go to another YouTube comment question. Josh Castanillos says, Castellanos, excuse me. Would you recommend holding on to my current position in B, Barrick, and SLV, or getting out? Thank you. I love everything you guys do. This is a great question. It was a very volatile Friday. They pulled back, silver, gold pulled back considerably. A lot of the material names, precious metal names, miners, they pulled that back considerably as well. And I've said this many times, especially over the last year, couple of years, when I said gold and silver, you need to have exposure here, is that you have to also be willing to take the volatility. Just because an asset class is an uptrend doesn't mean that it won't exhibit the same level of volatility as it always has. And when a chart goes parabolic, which precious metal prices kind of did over the past few weeks, and sentiment got really bullish, that sets up a tinderbox for a news story that will force selling of people that are levered, overexposed, etc. And that's what happened here with the news of Kevin Warsh as the next Fed president. And so the broader uptrend, however, is not broken. Kind of what we talked about yesterday with that call, or just that previous call, not yesterday, today with that previous call, is that the broader uptrend is still intact. Yeah, it went down 15, 20%, but that doesn't matter because that's what these things do. And you have to be comfortable with that. Now, if this continues to chop around and bleed lower and then eventually breaks uptrends, sure. Could it be a reason to sell? Yeah. But SLV is still well above, it's even above the 50-day moving average. So I see no reason to be selling this. In fact, we nibbled on Friday, nibbled a little bit today for new clients to pick up more shares within the space. Now we're going to a break. My focus point is coming up, the insurance inflation spike, and I'll have more answers to your finance and investment questions coming up.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP. On the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
The CPI says inflation is steady, but your bill says otherwise. And we look at the 26% spike in insurance costs starting this year, especially around ACA, Affordable Care Act, and that marketplace. On average, a 26% increase in prices this year. Now, what's interesting is that that's what you're feeling, or the average enrollee is feeling, if they get the extension of the subsidies. There we go. The health insurance subsidies that they're thinking about maybe getting rid of. Obviously, 22 of 24 million marketplace enrollees currently receive that tax credit. Now, if they don't extend it, you're talking about an over 100% increase on average for health insurance this year. So something that will definitely be on watch for everyone out there. I know for small businesses, the premiums are also going up. Now, only about 11%. That's what's interesting here, is that small businesses that bore the brunt of that will probably shop around the most versus the average consumer. And they're going to see about an 11% increase. This is looking at 318 different insurers across 50 states. And mainly this is driven healthcare costs by higher price for hospital care, physician services, and prescription drugs. And you're talking about labor shortages across facilities, especially with lack of new entrants to the workforce due to immigration slowing considerably. And then you have tariff-driven increase in costs as well. And then specialty drugs like GLP-1s are also adding to broader costs. And there's actually a decrease in enrollment and worsening risk pool of these smaller group plans. What you're seeing here is that for the average company, older workers are staying on longer. A lot of them can't afford to retire. And then a lot of younger workers aren't being hired, which makes overall costs for insurance higher. So that's one issue they're seeing as well. Now on the so that's health insurance. But what about property and casualty? That's a bit different. And you're seeing rising loan loss severity and volatility and changing capital market behaviors as well. A lot of these insurance companies, they are raising premiums because of these private equity investments that they can't get liquidity on. So that's part of this as well. And then you have more severity when it comes to actually loan loss or volatility around loan losses. So you have flooding in places like Dubai, tornadoes moving closer to the U.S. East Coast, wildfires in Europe. So more extreme weather events are driving this as well. And these climate patterns are certainly shifting the cost. And ultimately, this is a great tracker, really, of how the climate is evolving because insurance companies, they're modeling this. They're looking at it. They're seeing and feeling the impact. And that's pushing up their premiums. And after a couple of years of really, really good profitability, they're actually seeing a more competitive marketplace. And because they're seeing other carriers come in to certain lines across different geographies. And so from an earnings standpoint, you're talking about property and casualty insurers, I think earnings slowing just a bit. You also have rates on fixed income, like treasuries, coming down. That's hurts their profitability. That's what a lot of things they invest in are fixed income products. And so if they're earning less from those premiums on their investments, well, that can have an impact on their overall earnings. So you're seeing it from both ends, a lot of volatility and higher costs from covering the losses. And then on the investment side, lower revenue. So while generally I like insurance companies, it's definitely going to be a little bit harder slog this year and slower earnings growth than you've seen in previous years. Now let's pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank. You know the number. As always, it's 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my name is Robert from Millbury. I have a question about stock CRM, Salesforce. I was thinking about adding a small position into this to have some portion of my portfolio be into the tech sector without being into, you know, the big companies out there. But I don't see really an opportunity to come in. So I just wanted to get your thoughts about what would be your thoughts about getting into the stock at this time, or what would be an ideal opportune time, like what price that would look like. Thank you for your time.
All right, looking at Salesforce, CRM, and this is a name that's been in a strong downtrend right near a 52-week low, actually is at a 52-week low at the close today. So momentum is very poor. You have relative strength at 13. Earnings growth expected to be 15% this year and 12% next year. What's interesting about this is I actually have a friend who is in sales at Salesforce, and we were talking about AI, and he was saying, now this is his role, that he's selling more AI software seats, but he's actually losing from layoffs and downsizing even more. And so their net revenue from their customers is usually slightly negative. And I think that's an issue. Free cash flow has certainly slowed over the past year or so. It's still near an all-time high. That's a positive. And that's kind of the best you can say, to be honest with you. Now, they have a good balance sheet, very little debt. Return equity is 12%. Good, not amazing. And they're clearly threatened by AI. And if you look at its free cash flow yield, it's good, around 6%. But that's not great. It's not great. And so it's not really cheap enough for me to get excited about this. Now, it is trading as cheaply as it has, but that probably is for good reason. That AI, anything around cloud services, cloud software is starting to get hit. Why? Because of Claude Code. Claude Code basically allows any organization who might have somebody in-house. This is KPP Financial. Luke has a lot of coding skills. He's built stuff for us internally using Claude Code, and it is great. And so is this the start of companies building their own custom software to usurp their monthly subscription to cloud software like Salesforce? Long term, I would say, yeah. Why wouldn't you pay for, I think Claude Code's $100 a month? And we can basically build, I don't say anything, but anything that's fairly simple. And guess what? A CRM is not that complicated. All you're talking about is data and notes. It's not that complicated. Yeah, there's some integrations and APIs that can make it better, but most companies use it in a very simple form. And so while the fundamentals are, and it's relatively cheap, shall we say, compared to history, I hate the momentum. I think this heads lower, at least to about 192. Now we're trading at 210. And it could go all the way down to 125, which was where it traded in late 2022. So it's something to watch. It's something to see how much will Claude Code and the other AI tools help companies usurp software like Salesforce. And does growth eventually reverse in this name? So I'll be watching for it, a name I continue to have my watch list. But until I get some clarity on earnings growth and the future of this industry, I would certainly pass on CR. Now let's play two in a row from 888-99 chart.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I was calling to get your opinion on an insurance company called Chubb. The symbol is CB. So I wanted to see what you thought of the industry and what would be a good entry point. Thank you, and I'll be listening for the answer on your podcast.
Thank you so much for the call. Looking at Chubb, it is in the insurance space, provides commercial and property, personal property and casualty insurance, personal accident and accident insurance, health insurance, reinsurance, life insurance, etc. It is mainly, it has reinsurance products as well, about a 1.25% dividend yield. Earnings growth is 8% this year, 10% next year. Those estimates are going higher, so you certainly like that. Trading at low teens multiple, that's pretty good. If you look at profitability, 14% return on equity and for an insurance name, it's pretty solid. It's a competitive space, and it's definitely one of the best run insurance companies out there. It's pretty large, market cap $122 billion, and free cash flow around $15 billion. And is that rising? Yeah, it's actually come down a little bit. So that worries me. Is the decline in free cash flow and operating cash flow in the short term, but it's still a quality name. Relative strength is pretty strong, and it's in an uptrend. 70 is the relative strength. So I don't mind it if you're looking for an insurance stock, you're looking for insurance exposure, more finance exposure, certainly a solid name to own. So I'm going to give Chubb a thumbs up. Not our favorite within the space, but definitely one of those top 5-7 names. Now let's pivot to another caller question now.
Hi, good morning. So I just had a question on what your thoughts about fixed indexed annuities are. All right, thank you so much. Can't wait to hear the answers. Bye-bye.
All right, fixed income annuities. This is something almost everybody will be pitched at some point. They'll have a friend, a family member that got into the space. And most people who are working for a large firm, that's what they tend to do. They tend to sell annuity products, insurance products. And that's what these people are. They're salespeople. They're not advisors, not investment advisors. They're just pitching insurance products with huge, huge commissions. Remember, they're receiving 8 to 10% commissions on these, and usually some sort of trailing 25 basis points annually. Now, they're the devil's in the details in these names. They're going to have a lot of marketing talking points around safety and growth and all of that. And the history says they're bad investments. And they're illiquid. So you have a lockup period, usually 7 to 10 years, where if you sell it, you'll have to incur a huge surrender charge. You want to avoid that. And if you look at the vast majority of these products, they are poor investments. Now, they sound great, and they play up the safety of them with the growth. And that's certainly true. But over the long term, you're going to do much better by investing on your own. Outside of an annuity product, you'll have more liquidity, et cetera. So these are what I would say about annuities is fixed annuities, not fixed indexed annuities. Big difference here, big difference between fixed annuities and fixed indexed annuities. So the index is tied to a particular index, and usually they're very, very high fees. And it really isn't worth those high fees. Once again, you can get better growth over the long term by just sticking it in that index, for example. And you have liquidity, okay? And you could just hold it and not pay the taxes, right? So they'll pitch you a lot about tax advantage, but when you go sell it, you pay the taxes just like you would by owning the underlying index in an ETF form or something like that. If you want safety and you want income, you want that stability, well, then you go with a fixed annuity. Now, you don't get pitched those very often. Why? Because they don't make very big commissions on fixed annuities. For the right person who wants to basically make up a certain level of guaranteed income, I think a fixed annuity with a portion of assets can be good. The worry always about that is inflation. Fixed products of any time, fixed income of any kind, whether it's an annuity or bond or whatever, the inflation risk is high. And in this environment, I think we all can agree that inflation is a big risk at this point. So you never want to do all of your money into a fixed annuity. But if, let's say, Social Security, you brought in $3,000 a month and your month-to-month expenses in retirement are $5,000, you want to make up that $2,000 by having a fixed annuity and get to that $5,000 level, that could be a good reason to buy one of those, is for that, the security of your fixed cost. But beyond that, as an investment, longer term, they're just poor investments. So you're getting sold it. Don't allow them to sell you on it and get their big commissions, because it's just not something you likely need. Either do a fixed annuity if that's what you're going for, but if you're looking for best long-term growth, you want to stay away from that. Invest just in the broader market. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal each and every weekday, is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So if you're going to call, you want to do that right now at 888-99-CHART.
The calls are free, the unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's tackle another YouTube comment question. Selena Marie says, what do you think of PayPal? I'm down 26%. Is this a hold or should I set an exit point? It seems there are multiple factors putting pressure on the stock. Well, PayPal has been in a downtrend, and it's one of those names where it trades at a cheap price. It is buying back shares pretty aggressively. And frankly, you have to certainly wonder, where's the bottom? It has strong cash flow, and clearly the market is worried about the trajectory of earnings, even though earnings are expected to grow 15% this year and 7% next year. But if you take a look at the net income, It's at $4.9 billion. It's at a 52, at an all-time high, but it's certainly slowing, shall we say. But, you know, it's really the value here. You're talking about a 10% free cash flow yield, cash from operations, $6.4 billion on a $49 billion market cap. And it is taking that and it is just plowing it back into share repurchases in a big way. And so it does look cheap. Where is the ultimate bottom here? Let me zoom out to a weekly chart. Yeah, this support down around, yeah, it could go all the way down to $46. I think 46 would be my out. That's where it broke out from back in, call it $45, back in its highs in 2016. And if it breaks that, that would be a huge worry. So it's not too far from here, talking about 12-13% from here. That would be my out on PayPal. But I still think it's very cheap and it should turn around, especially kind of just buy back a ton of shares at these levels. Now, lastly, let's talk about the housing market. The housing market, and buyers are enjoying discounts at the highest rate since 2019. 62% of buyers last year purchased a home below the original listing price. On average, the homes that sold below list price were about 8%, the largest since 2012. And buyers are getting a lot of concessions from their sellers on closing costs and down payments. And clearly the market is tilted back in the buyer's favor. It is a buyer's market. Now, not an extreme buyer's market, but definitely a buyer's market in most of the country. And the U.S. housing market had over 600,000 more sellers than buyers in December. That's the biggest gap on record going back to 2016. That's according to Redfin. And those that still can buy, they have a lot of homes to choose from, more bargaining power, et cetera. And they're certainly taking advantage of it, especially in recent months. You've seen existing home sales up 5.1% in December. So part of that is mortgage rates are now lower than they were a year ago, and prices are generally lower than they were a year ago. So there's a little bit of affordability correction happening. Now I'll say, I think there's a lot more to come. And I think this was 2025 was year one of probably a 4 to 5 year corrective period in housing nationally. Now, not an 08 crash, but could you see in many markets prices down 20-30% from their peak in 2023? Sure. I think that's very, very, very possible. And it'll be interesting. Very interesting. I don't think we're going to 25-30% drop nationwide, but in certain markets, I could easily see that. Now, what were the markets where you saw the most buyer-friendly activity? And that was southern markets. You're talking about Florida and Texas. This is where a lot of new home construction happened in recent years. So there's much more supply of new homes that compete with existing homes. In Florida, metro areas, West Palm Beach, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, at least 85% of home buyers last year paid under the original listing price. In addition, the strongest markets were actually Newark, New Jersey. Only 32% paid under original list price. And then San Francisco and San Jose, that's about 39%. Mainly because there's not a lot of room for new construction, or hasn't been a lot of new construction in those markets. So that's the current update on the housing market. And I think this was, like I said, that was year one of a multi-year correction. Now I'm Justin Klein. And have you heard about KPP Financial's parallel investing? When we make a trade for our clients, we make the same trade for ourselves on the same day at the same price, the same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. We share the same risk and potential for success as our clients. We invest right alongside our clients. So learn more at investtalk.com. Please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes and Spotify. And head over to our YouTube channel and subscribe. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.